I don't know how many episodes you've listened to. I know you've listened to at least a little because you know that we've talked about David Duke Carr.
Yes.
But we don't have theme music. And so in lieu of theme music, what we do is we just play When the Saints Come Marching In on mouth horns, which you're welcome to join us for. If you do, you know, we'll count it off. And otherwise, you can just wait and we'll get to you in a minute. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. Hey, everyone. Welcome to City Saint, Country Saint, episode 16, 17, I don't know. We're at week 16 of the season. The team is now a miserable 7-8 after yet another depressing loss where a final drive might have sealed it, but we cocked it away. We now do not control our own destiny. But a team that can't win never controls their own destiny, which makes me already know the answer to the question, but I ask it anyway. Ron, how are you doing?
I'm at the bottom loop of the roller coaster that I've been around on 20 times already. If they took a picture of me and tried to sell it back to me, it would just be the same, you know, stoic face. Like, oh, here it is. I'm sick of this one.
Right. Oh, look, a Rapa Nui statue rode our roller coaster.
That's me. And they will not get my 20 bucks. Yeah.
Yeah, that is how I feel. I have to... Oh, the beginning of the game... You know, we'll get to the game later, but really early in the game when we went down, Skooks posted in the group chat, guys, you know how it's going to go. We're going to give up a big lead. We're going to close to within a possession, and then the game will end. And at the time, that didn't seem realistic. I did not think we would get to within a possession, but by gum, these sons of bitches... made it back to within one possession.
Yeah, he killed it. Like I saw the chat the next day because I had a friend over. We were watching the game, so I didn't really check the chat. And then the next day when I was scrolling through it, I was like, he fucking predicted it. He fucking nailed it. That was the incredible. Shout out to Skooks.
Shout out to Skooks. Yeah. Shout out to Skooks. And so with us this week, to make us feel even more miserable, someone who, he may or may not have been rooting against us, because wherever his passions lie, he's now a businessman. But you know him from Ruthless Reviews, where he wrote with L. Ron Mexico. You know him from the guest appearances they did together on Soundtracker for I Know Roadhouse. Was there another one?
Yeah.
MacGruber.
What? MacGruber.
Oh, MacGruber. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So they did a couple episodes of Soundtracker. Everyone, say hello to Plexico Gingrich. How are you doing, Plex?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to also be depressed.
Depressed.
But yeah. I understand.
I have no soul left when it comes to sports at all. So.
Yeah. No, that's understandable. So you're. I mean, you told me this. I did not actually know this until you mentioned it in. You know, while we were getting ready for the episode. But you are. You now gamble for your daily bread for real.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been gambling full time for like 15 years or something like that. And started out playing poker, moved on to other things. And I do some sports betting. Like that's been, it's fluctuated how much time and energy I've invested in that. But I thought that was possibly some angle we could take since there's so much misinformation and horribleness surrounding the sports betting explosion. And just that fact in itself, to me, is interesting. I mean, you know, just from like a social and political perspective, that we've done this like total flip on that where mm-hmm. I kind of think of it like smoking and gambling.
Yeah, how was like the injection of all these like regular Joes, like, you know, this influx of just morons that can legally do this now. And you, as like a sharp, as one of the smart guys in the industry, are you able to take advantage of all the idiots? Like, you know, everybody I know who downloaded an app and now loses like hundreds of dollars a week to this shit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't directly take advantage of them, but they're the ones who make that industry so profitable that,
sure,
that it creates opportunity. Right. Cause like it's a rare situation right now in the U.S. where you have something that's been prohibited, just like alcohol, and you already know that this is like $100 billion industry, or I think it's like multi-hundred, I don't know, whatever it is. It's shitloads and shitloads of money.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like, it's a guaranteed to succeed product. So all these companies are just throwing millions and millions and millions of dollars out there trying to bring people in because they know that 1 in 10 of them is going to like lose their life savings and lose their house and everything. So if they can rope these people in and get
I mean, I just saw one of the big venture capital funds who had been shorting, I think, DraftKings for a while because the theory was it is a low, the theory at first was it's a low margin business with very competitive landscape. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't want to be in it while all of these companies were very promo heavy and spending a lot on customer acquisition.
Right.
And what he found out was that they had, and he wrote a report on this, on why he was now investing. Like, he had closed his shorts and was now going long on these companies, was how incredibly bad Americans are at sports betting, which is to say, and I mean, Defector actually explained it in more detail, that the in-game bets and the long shot parlays and all of the things that have big numbers, but they are like big odds numbers in the way that playing the lottery, you get really good odds. It's like, yeah, you're getting 200 million to one on a billion to one bet.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So you're almost certainly losing at, you know, way a bunch of zeros beyond the decimal point chance of you actually cashing that ticket. And so they have built an entire industry of people who might be able to beat the odds if they were just playing money lines, and have tempted them into this killing field of parlays with really shitty odds.
Yeah. Right, and you can see that. You can see, because everybody posts like a parlay they missed by one or two. And I'm like, that's the fucking point. That's the fucking point. You didn't just miss it. They fucking got your ass. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, we can get in to like the specifics of parlays and stuff if you want to a little bit later, but what you said reminded me of I was kind of thinking of like how I should explain why anyone should listen to me as opposed to like, you know, other people on this, or like how I have credibility, or how Bill Simmons. I mean, I I would give Bill Simmons a little bit of a break in that at least he presents himself as clueless. You know, he's just like, yeah, I'm just doing this for fun. I don't really know, you know, whereas like on a lot of,
that's true. I mean,
like on ESPN, you turn on ESPN and they have somebody out there, like they're giving you serious financial advice, you know, like this is, oh, I think you'll make money if you make this bet.
Right.
Like, of course you can't. But the thing is that gambling, I thought of the, do you guys watch Futurama, or did you ever watch Futurama?
Before we get ahead of ourselves, let's just talk a little bit about, let's just introduce the audience to you.
Okay.
You have been primarily gambling for how long as your main gig?
About 15 years. And initially that was mostly poker. Then I learned more about sports betting, and then I learned how to do some other things in the casino.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know,
okay. So it's just an easy place to pick pockets is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. If you know what you're doing, I mean, you know, there's a lot to learn. It's one of those things, like it's, there's a lot to learn. And then when you learn it, it's pretty easy actually. So,
right. Okay. And so what were you doing before you went into, sports gambling? Cause I mean, obviously I first knew you, I mean, I, obviously you were probably doing this already because I haven't been on Twitter more than I've been on Twitter about 15 years, but the, you were already, I knew you as like a cultural critic, movie reviews and, you know, shit posting and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what were you, what was your actual vocation before you went to the sports?
Just kind of a failure in general. You know, I did like, you know, all that stuff like Uber, substitute teacher. And then I did work in casinos in California for a few years, and I learned some stuff doing that. So that kind of gets into what I was saying before, where like gambling is just this real weird world where like most of the people I know who gamble for a living, like washed out in other things. I mean, there's a couple exceptions, but it's usually like you're kind of smart. You don't have to be all that smart, but like nothing else worked out for you. So you're like, man, I guess I'll try, you know, playing poker or something, and finally it clicks, you know.
I see the end result of this of like, all right, as the economy is getting harder and harder to make a living, you're going to probably start getting smarter and smarter guys in your field. You know what I mean? Because now like these guys can be engineers or doctors. So like, I'm guessing like, do you see that? Is that a thing that's happening?
It is happening. And, you know, information disseminates, you know, poker strategy disseminates, sports betting strategy, and all these things spread out. But I guess this gets to, I don't know. What I was saying before, like about the Futurama TV show similar to The Simpsons by the creator of The Simpsons. And there's this episode, it's a sci-fi show. And there's this episode where these brains from another world that are like, you know, a force of malevolence in the universe invade Earth, and they turn everyone into a complete idiot, except the protagonist of the show, Fry, who was an idiot to begin with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is like, I always related to him because he was like delivering pizzas as an adult and stuff, which I was doing, you know, and he wasn't that smart and I'm not that smart. But when everybody else was made even dumber than him, he became like the smartest person on Earth by default and was able to defeat the brain. And that's how gambling is. Like gambling just turns people's brains into mush. Yeah. And for some reason, like a little teeny part of the population is impervious to it, or it doesn't affect us that much. Yeah. And there are people who are like so much smarter than I am. But like the example I thought of, this isn't like, I mean, there's a lot of examples. Even the people who run the casinos are like totally irrational about it. But there's an economist named, I think I'm saying his name right, Richard Thaler, who invented behavioral economics or co-invented it and all this stuff. And he used to go around, he was trying to challenge the classical economics model of, you know, people are
like risk averse. Is this the guy, the risk aversion, like winning 50 cents or losing 50 cents or whatever?
Right. He would go to these economics professors. These are like Ivy League professors who make a really good living. You know, they make a good living at their post, and then they're also doing consulting work and all this stuff. And he would ask them to flip a coin. And I forget exactly what he would say, but he would be like, I'll put up 750 to your 500 on a coin flip. So they have like a massive advantage. Like I would, you know, I would get an erection if someone offered me that. Yeah. But these people would say no because they were so risk averse, even though they could easily afford it. They're just like, well, but what if I lose? You know,
Yeah, I mean, there's the risk aversion. It's funny. There are two things that I think in response to that. The way that I have generally heard about Thaler's experiments is not, and that certainly may be part of it. It's not like I've read a ton of Thaler or anything, but people in general didn't like the thing that sounded like maybe losing instead of maybe winning. Right. Like,
and there are different elements of it.
The other is Sam Bankman-Fried, who, if he was given like a million to one odds on something or whatever, where the downside, like there's some unspecified upside for him, but the downside is distributed to the whole world. Like he could double his income versus world annihilation. Oh, right. He's like, well, whatever. Might as well try to double my income. Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's a point at which your risk aversion is just sociopath.
Right. Yeah. And there's also, you know, gambler's fallacy, which, I mean, when I worked in casinos, there would be people, I had somebody who would come in and play craps and they would write down all the results, believing that the past results predicted the future.
Right. Yeah.
Which of course they don't, right? Like if you see a roulette wheel that came up red 15 times in a row, it's essentially 50-50 on the next one. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, right?
And the roulette wheel still posts the history on it, and people will study it at the table, and it makes no sense. And
people sit there studying it.
Yeah.
And you know, and I asked this guy what he did, and he was like a high school physics teacher, you know? And this is just, I mean, it's all over the place. And like I said, even the casinos themselves will do all kinds of things that mathematically don't make sense. Like, there was a casino in Vegas that wouldn't let Dana White, the UFC guy, was playing $20,000 a hand blackjack or something, and he just got hot. He just got lucky and won. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we don't want your action anymore. It's like, this guy's trying to hand you thousands and thousands of dollars, but they're, you know, it's run by business people. They don't necessarily understand all this stuff. And that's what you know, when you were talking about, like, the guy shorting the DraftKings stock, it's like he's thinking that people behave somewhat rationally when it, you know, like, well, why wouldn't you just scoop up all of these huge bonuses and just pocket them? Because gambling turns everyone into a moron.
Yeah.
and they'll just they'll just piss it all away on long shot parlays, and then they'll be like, oh, I missed by one. I almost won 20,000, and then they'll keep doing it and doing it, and then they'll lose their house. And that's another aspect of gambling professionally, is these are all really, really evil companies. So it's fun to beat them.
It is. It just hit me that, like, if you say DraftKings is publicly traded, like the stock market is already gambling. So you're betting on bets. This is just more side bets, apparently. Like, this is all, the stock market is one big casino. Like, really, like, I mean, what capitalism has, like, kind of like this, it's rigged in a way, like, well, the whole earth is now a casino, right? And it's it's a casino that doesn't have a HVAC system because it's turning into an oven. But, like, as it breaks, it seems like like the games are getting harder to win in here. But there's this whole side, like, simulation of the games that Plex is involved in, like, that is like a mirror of the quote unquote real world, but it's not that real. Maybe you're in the more real world than the shit that they're doing, but I don't know, it's kind of trippy. Like, it's only a matter of time before they start making, like, fucking derivatives on, like, the, you know, the Bears Giants line, or so. Can they sell, like, the way they subprime package mortgages as commodities? Are they going to end up doing that with sports lines or something like that? Like, they'll sell futures on it or some shit.
They're going to end up doing it with the loans that gamblers
take. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Those loans have been repackaged. Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean,
they're putting the mom and pop pawn shop out of business.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, for illegal bookies, that's really where they make their money. You know, and the mafia and stuff is off the loans.
Yeah.
And that's why people still go to illegal bookies, because they can bet on credit.
Mm. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually, like, they won't need the guy, you know, the guy from next door who would come break your legs when you owed him money. You know, now it's like the sheriff deputy shows up and puts the eviction notice on your house. It's just like, now this is just filtered through this fucking state. You know what I mean? They've just like, oh, like the same way weed has, you know? And all drugs will be. Yeah.
Although, I mean, I think, you know, I'm in favor of legalized weed, obviously. I think it's not that bad a drug, but...
Yeah.
It's amazing to me. Like I kind of suggested earlier, but like I think gambling is highly, highly destructive, probably worse than smoking. Yeah. And, but there's money to be made and people have the right connections. And so like as a country, we just plunged in what, maybe 3 years time.
Yeah.
We went from gambling being, you know, restricted to, you know, like Las Vegas and Atlantic City and stuff like that. And,
yeah,
and now
that is how I feel about law school. So you know, everyone's profession is evil unless you do it in moderation.
And that's true, because even with Vegas having a fucking football team now, like that was taboo that Las Vegas would have any professional sports team, because nobody wanted to give the, you know, the optics of like we're in bed with gambling. And then like as soon as that fell apart, the Raiders, you know, let's send them to Las Vegas.
And now ESPN is like, you know, like on SportsCenter, they've got some guy telling you how to open an account using your dad's credit card or something like that. I mean,
here's where you buy another social security number.
Right. I mean, they're promoting the shit out of it. And they put, I mean, they've been doing this for a while, but they put these people on the air who are making picks. And a lot of them are in the business of selling picks and selling advice. And they're just straight con artists. Right. Like they have no idea what they're talking about in terms of gambling. None of them. Absolutely. So that'd be like one, if, you know, if you want my advice on something. I would be like, probably one of the top things is never listen to those people and absolutely never pay for the information. Because it's not information. It's just garbage they made up. And it's just amazing. This Vegas was, of course, kind of ahead of the curve on this. But I remember when I moved here, they would have these people, some of these people on, and I'd be listening and I'm like, well, this is ESPN. I mean, I didn't know that much about sports betting, and I was like, well, this is ESPN, and, you know, the guy who's hosting the show works for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, which is our main paper, and I'm like, they wouldn't just put, like, an absolute con artist who's trying to swindle their listeners on the air, I don't think. Like, they must have some sort of integrity, right? You would think so, but they don't. None of them do, you know, and there's, they, and.
Well, of course not. I mean, as soon as they stop talking, they put on a commercial for a product you don't need.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the whole culture's garbage if you want to go down that road, but.
Yeah.
And there's just like no pushback at all. There's like nobody, as far as I know, there's never been somebody like, you know, Stephen A. Smith or. Or, you know, like Shaq, I mean, and Peyton and Eli do ads for these companies. None of these people ever say, like, you know what, I'm worth like $250 million. I don't need to scam my fans to make an extra million. Like, no.
Well, that, like, I no mean, resistance. That comes down. Yeah, but I mean, that comes down to, I mean, there was a conversation. I don't remember who he was talking to, but Chomsky was talking to, some kind of centristy mainstream media journalist who was interviewing him. And the person was like, so are you saying that I'm bought and paid for? Like, I mean, these are my sincere, but we disagree about politics, but these are my sincere beliefs or whatever. And Chomsky's like, I'm not saying you're not sincere. I'm saying the only reason you have that job is because you believe it.
Right.
Like, they're not interested in neutrality or a real debate or figuring out what the right answer is. It's that you already believe the thing that they want to tell. That makes it even easier than having to buy you off.
Is that they
just hire the fish who already ate the worm.
Right. Yeah. That's similar to the, you know, I saw some kind of libertarian group that tweeted that, you know, like political contributions don't necessarily change the views of the actual politician, the congressman or whatever, very much. And it's like, yeah, that's because they've already been handpicked to be like, you know, neoliberal, you know, pro mass incarceration, everything like that, you know, okay.
Well, that's,
so they found someone, they found someone who's crazy enough to actually believe all this stuff and installed them in office. You know, they're not deviating from their views. Just
right. I mean, that was Stephen Calabresi, whose dad, before he was like a Federalist Society, and I think he's a judge or at least a professor himself. His dad was a Second Circuit judge, I think. And, you know, Calabresi clerked for Clarence Thomas, and he writes this whole thing, I think he did anyway, about how Thomas's jurisprudence is, you know, consistent and incorruptible, and so it's not a big deal that he takes gifts from his friends. And any sane person is like, no, no, no. He is fully purchased, not incorruptible.
Right.
Like he comes with a warranty, idiot.
Yeah. Right.
Like that's not, that's not incorruptible that he has, he is like so conclusively corrupt that, you know, he can take gifts from the people he agreed to spend his life working for. Like, what are you, what is this madness?
It's almost like the argument's like, well, we're so corrupt that we're not corrupt.
Yeah, it makes its own ideology. It creates its own world. And that's really easy to do in media, you know, like especially something like ESPN. But yeah, we're not getting anybody good in there. Yeah, they're not hiring anybody. No, Noam Chomsky ain't going, you know, sit on first take or whatever, you know, like not like let them do that.
That would be the first take episode I've watched in a long time. I wouldn't miss that.
Yeah. Stephen A versus Chomsky.
but you know, even so I guess the athletes themselves, sometimes that's disappointing because you do think like, well, these people haven't been through that filtration process. They're just gifted, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, like a lot of times I feel like, you know, like Mookie Betts, the baseball player, I remember some of his, talk about all the Black Lives Matter type stuff. And he was like really great. You know, and I'm like, that's because he's a random guy. He's in a sense, he's not like somebody with an agenda or somebody who's trying to promote themselves or anything like that, you know? And so you kind of think erroneously, I guess, but you know, that some of these athletes, like they would actually be like, no, I don't want to steer my fans to this kind of thing, you know, but it doesn't seem to happen.
I mean,
much.
But if they're like that, then they're just invisible.
Yeah,
right. You know, yeah,
it's
that's
not
true.
Like the, it's not like there's going to be some carry nation of gambling who, you know, just goes, who retires and then is like, this whole industry is out of order. Who cares? They'd be written off like a lunatic. It's not like they'd get extra coverage.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
It's their relationship too to how they make their money. They might have made it from playing, but if they're getting a lot still from endorsements, like a lot of the TV personalities are, like you see now endorsements, anything in the spectacle that appears is good and anything good will appear. Like, so like if DraftKings now has enough money for a commercial, like they're ordained under this system. And that's the same system you're getting money from, not from playing ball anymore. So you just think, oh, DraftKings, they're legit. Yeah, I'm not going to. Why? It can't. It has to be good. It exists. It's legal now. If they were bad, they wouldn't be allowed to exist. And I think that does like the heavy lifting for them because of like
The DraftKings commercial now is Kevin Hart with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Those are our buddies.
You know, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who also does, is it Thursday Night Football?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with, you know, he's doing the sideline stuff with Richard Sherman and Andre Whitworth and Tony Gonzalez, you know? Yeah. So it's just media.
Yeah.
Like, I think people, when people wonder how the players are going to relate to this when they retire, it assumes that the players are doing like any critical analysis of it at all, that they even bother to think about it on some kind of political or moral spectrum. And I mean, here I am hosting a fucking football podcast talking about this shit like I care. And it's easy for me to say all of this because I'm only in a consumer's position and I enjoy it. And I have like my own critical analyses of all these things, but I don't escape it either. Mm-hmm. Right? So who am I to, like, at a certain point, I'm worse, you know, like, because I've thought about it and not given it up, right? They don't think about it at all, and they make a lot of money from it. I get nothing out of it but hemorrhoids and agita, and I still can't stop watching, because the end product of football, which is itself violent and causes people long-term damage,
right,
is fun for me.
Right. You're having fun watching these guys. And
so
and
20 I don't know.
Years later, a couple of them are going to be committing suicide because of CTE or something, you know.
Right. Yeah. That's why gambling allows you to become as suicidal as your heroes.
Get in the game.
That's
true. You're really in the game.
Definitely get there. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about now that we've morally condemned it. Let's talk a little bit about it in the most morally neutral way. So are you at, like, are you still at some level a Rams fan now? Like, do you care about the highs and lows of the team, or does gambling kind of divorce you from that kind of fan level of it?
Gambling. I mean, I do know people who still like have teams, but that's unusual. And I root for my teams. I don't know. Like, it's a, I still root. I mentioned, I don't think we recorded that part, but I lived in Alabama until I was 10. So in the football domain, probably the Crimson Tide is still a team. I will kind of like sweat the game a little bit. I lived there long enough to be indoctrinated into that fanatical cult. And pro sports, I view pro sports maybe a little bit like prostitution, in contrast to college sports, where like a college sport, there actually is some kind of connection between the community and the college and things like that, you know. Whereas like with the pros, like the team might have the name of your city on it, but all they really want is to suck all the money out of your schools and fire departments and put it in their pocket, you know, and they don't care if you live or die. If you're willing to accept that, like that they have no real connection to you at all, then I can, I enjoy pro sports like that. Like, like knowing that there's just no emotional connection and it's just a experience. But I don't really know that
college sports is that different anymore.
It's
especially
not,
at the Alabama level.
Certainly Alabama is not the best example of that. you know, and then I think that, you know, when I listen to you guys and you're like all rah, rah, rah about the Saints or anybody on their team, I sort of think of it as like you're the one who's like, you know, paying for sex or whatever, and you're like, you guys, I think this girl really likes me, you know. I think if I pay off her credit cards and show her how much I care, you know, maybe she'll give this life up and come live with me. And I'm like they don't
know. I no longer think that. I just want her to lie to me.
She's not lying good enough right now. Yeah, I'm just not
just
it.
Put on a good performance,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Wait, I'm hold
I'm
on.
Like,
one.
We both know what this is. Okay, you don't have to fake it.
That's right. We are just regular Johns,
right?
For our football teams.
I did
and
have
a, in a classic Seinfeldian sense, we are rooting for laundry. And hate most of the people who wear it.
Definitely hate.
But what were you going to say?
Oh, because you were asking about fandom and like, so I did remember as I mean, I'd mentioned before, like I forget what we talked about on and off the air, but you know, when I was a kid, I think a lot of people when they're 12 and 13, they have maybe like their primary team. My primary team was the Bears, but living in LA, I did like the Rams. I did kind of like the Raiders too. And so, to me, my high point as a semi-Rams fan was not them winning the Super Bowl, especially because they were in St. Louis, but it was when Jim Everett came over the table on Jim Rome.
Yeah, sure.
And that was like I saw that happen live, and I've watched it many times since. And I imagine most people listening are old enough to know about that. But if you haven't seen it in a while, it's great because it's like Rome's just being, I don't really hate Jim Rome or anything, but he's being a bully, you know, he's being a dick, and he's sort of
and like, he's being a dick because he thinks he's invulnerable.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. That's what's so great about it.
He is like, I can taunt this guy because you wouldn't hit a guy with glasses, would you?
Right.
You know, he's like, because I know that there are no stakes, I can just keep needling this guy who everyone knows could beat me up even if he were on a gallon of NyQuil. So I will harass this guy, and so I look cool, in the same way that Quentin Tarantino writes the N-word into a script so he can say it to Sam L. Jackson without being summarily executed. And so there he is, calling him Chris Everett, Chris, and then the table goes over, and I'm like, good, you're both assholes, but at least the scrawny nerd is getting beat up because he crossed the line.
Yeah, I think for Rome, I don't know what his high school life was, but it was like, you know, of course, traditionally, in a high school scenario, Everett would be able to physically dominate him and therefore would be able to be in that same position. I can do anything I want to you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And then they go into this other domain where Rome, of course, he's a professional smack talker.
His name is on the wall.
Right. You know, I'm quicker than you are. I'm smarter than you are. And I can dominate and humiliate you now. And there's nothing you can do about it. And then whenever somebody's doing that, it's fun to see them proven wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
We need more of that. Do y'all have a guy you'd love to see get, you know, Jim Rome on live on TV, like right now? You know?
God, how long do you have?
All right. If I had to,
like, Skip Bayless is too easy, I guess.
Oh, yeah. God, Skip would be so good. Skip would like beautiful. It. Though.
Like,
yeah. It'd just be sad.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I read a thing about him once where, like, apparent youth, like, I think I actually know that Stephen A. Smith is really, really smart, and he just does dumb stuff for money. Mm-hmm. Because I've heard him used to have like a long form radio show, and he's a really bright guy. Skip Bayless, apparently, based on this profile I read of him, really believes this stuff. Like, this is him being completely earnest.
Oh God!
And he actually has like a record he keeps of his wins and losses in debates, and he thinks he's like 7,000-0. And like, he genuinely goes around talking like this.
But this is a guy whose like primary argument is that LeBron is a phony. Yeah.
Right. LeBron James is bad at basketball.
Yeah.
That's another great thing about our culture is like, if in almost any form of discourse, being a genuine idiot who doesn't know what you're talking about can be a huge boon to your career. Like, Skip Bayless is famous for being a moron.
Yeah. And like you said, he's a true believer. Didn't he get divorced because of this shit?
Yeah. He is divorced, and he did have some kind of weird family thing. But I don't know. I want to answer your question, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know what? I probably would pick one of these. Like, do you guys know who RJ Bell is? You ever hear of him?
No.
He's been on Stephen A. Smith. He goes on Cowherd. He's one of these guys who gives sports picks and sells them for he makes a lot of money doing it. There's like a whole Deadspin article where they tracked like all the picks from his company. And like, you could, there were more of them where you actually could have made money betting the opposite side of them than there were that were like break even, which is in a way it's remarkable. Like it should be break even because it's just random. But anyway, well, my favorite, would love if some pro athlete like lost $100,000 on one of his picks and came over the table.
Just smashes his face. I want to hear Cowherd get beat up, but just audio, right? Just like hear him like, hey, you can't come in here. And then you hear like a bunch of shit rustling around.
It's like coming off the, on and off the mic. It's like,
yeah. Yeah, you just keep hearing like smacks and shit.
Yeah,
it's
like, yeah, I mean, I'm too far removed from it. But every time, like when I was growing up and listening to, you know, I was probably mostly grown up by the time this was a regular thing, but listening to a lot of Mike and the Mad Dog, I hated Mike because he was such a blowhard. And the Mad Dog was kind of, you know, passionate, but I don't know, seemed also kind of toothless and so funny as a kind of counterpoint. And every time I hear him now as the main guy, he seems like he's just, as his life has gotten immeasurably better, he's become more insane and reactionary, and whatever latent crypto racism was always there, it now seems like to the fore. Like this guy who literally makes a living screaming incoherently about nothing has very strong opinions about like attitude on the field and stuff like that. Yeah. And I'm just like, so if he were to fall into an open manhole, if he were to be confronted by anyone whose opinion, who he's given an opinion on, I'd be fine with that now. But mostly I've like, I don't drive as much as I used to because I don't have to, you know, I work from home and I don't have to, you know, drive out to my mom's place anymore and that kind of thing. And so sports radio is mostly in my rear view.
Yeah.
So thank God for that. but every time he makes an appearance because he said something dumb enough to go viral, I was like, yeah, he could disappear and I'd be fine. We do have to talk about this game, which, and so to start talking about this game, we are once again, we weren't supposed to be on the wrong side of this more than 50% of the time, Ron. And yet here we are on the wrong side of Get Our Ass yet again, where our guests get to simply make fun of us uninterrupted because you beat us. I think the final score here was, what, 30 to 22? Yeah. Something like that? Yeah, 30 to 22.
It was eight points, yeah.
Yeah, 30 to 22. So you get to get our ass. Are you ready? Are you ready, Plex, to get our ass?
Well, yeah, I am to a degree. I mean, you guys preemptively did it. I mean, you know, it was like the worst case scenario for you guys, kind of, because it's like you got the shit kicked out of you all game. We could see how terrible your team was, and that they're kind of directionless, and you know that Derek Himmler Carr or whatever is, you know, not the answer. And then you miraculously, you know, come back, get within eight, have a chance to, like, you know, pull one out, and then just collapse into nothing and
that's correct,
flail about on the field in ineptitude and then lose.
That is a good summary.
Yeah, that sums it up.
That is a good and accurate summary of exactly how this.
That's works. More accurate than any highlights of the game. They could just play that and be like, "Yeah, that's, you know."
Yeah,
nailed it.
Yeah, I actually missed part of it because they, I went to watch the game at Caesar's Palace, and I was going to play poker and watch it, but I couldn't get a good view of the screen. So I went to the sports book and, just chapter 8 million of how evil these companies are. They're now asking you to pay $25 to sit there in the sports book and watch a game. Right. So they threw me out. I'm like, I'm here playing poker. I'm buying dinner here. I can't sit here for 45 minutes. Like, no, it's $25. Like, sit in a fucking chair and watch a game that's like, you know, free. And so I left and went to a sports bar and watched the rest.
That's crazy. I will consider that the getting of our ass. I think that's right, that we are just total fools for buying in. And we really did convince ourselves to be optimistic. Even though I think we thought we were going to lose to you guys, we still let ourselves be a little optimistic. And then we managed, even in having some decent plays, a decent start, every critical decision seemed to be stupider than the one before it. You know, like, we start the game, we get a, you know, third down and seven, sacked. And then we give up a long touchdown drive, like really long, like 95 yards long touchdown drive, including a terrible DPI. And our next drive, again, on third down, incomplete. And then at the LA 39, this was inexplicable to me. We could have kicked a 55-yarder, and instead they went for it, and he got sacked again. Which, like, what the fuck, man? Then we get a holding penalty, and then the touchdown, which was like, oh, all right. But, like, again, like, inside your territory, another failed fourth down with just enough time. Like, that was the time we should have punted, because that just gave a short field to the Rams, who, like, managed to score before the half. Just insane stuff.
And they got it back right after halftime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They scored a field goal on that. They failed every fourth down. They went 0 for 4 on fourth down, including a 3-yard pass on fourth and seven. You love that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And then when they cut it to 8 with 4 minutes left.
Onside. Yeah.
Of all for cock decisions.
Onside.
Onside kick. And, I mean, what's really funny, and I don't talk about him much because he's old enough that I'm not really allowed to talk about him. My kid's 15. And on every one of those decisions, before they failed, my son is like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
He should coach the Saints.
Like, why? Yeah, why are you not kicking this field goal? Why are you going for it from midfield when there's still a minute left in the half and you can pin them back? Why are you kicking onside when no one ever recovers onside kicks that they know are coming, right? Like, the offense never gets those. There are 4 minutes left. Why would you be doing this? And he was like, somehow the Saints never justified their decision by actually making the play. Not once.
Yeah.
Not once did they justify the confidence to do the risky thing, because they screwed it up every time. And then, as an extra bonus, Cam Jordan with a neutral zone infraction, which gave them an extra 25 seconds to run off the clock. So we couldn't even hope for, like, a blocked field goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Just completely inexplicable to me how they did this every single time.
We were outcoached.
It's amazing to me that, like, these tactical decisions aren't just like standardized, you know, like, you know, the Patriots, part of the reason they were so successful is like Bill Belichick has this guy, Ernie Fox or whatever, who's like some autistic guy who he keeps chained in the basement and like tells him what to do in all these situations. And the Patriots like always make the right decisions, you know, and that's been going on for 20 years. And like a lot of these things, like, should you go for it on fourth? Should you do this? Like, you could just make a little chart, you know, more or less. I mean, there are going to be, you know, more nuanced situations, but it's just amazing. Like, at this super high level, $1 billion industry where people are all making $5, $6, $10 million a year. And like, they're just like making objectively wrong tactical decisions that have been solved. And like, it's figured out. We know what the right answer is, you know? And they're just like, no, I'm going to kick the field goal on, you know, fourth and one down seven or whatever.
Right. Like, I hate Dennis Allen and I hate artificial intelligence, but I still think we can replace DA with AI.
Yes.
And it would be right much more. Yeah,
we could have a Sean Payton AI, and then there we go. We're good. We don't need the fucking...
That's right.
No fucking DA. God. And he was cocky after last week's win. Like, he got fucking cocky with the press and everything like that.
Oh, super cocky.
Fucking asshole.
Yeah, winning back-to-back against the Panthers and the Giants, and all of a sudden you're feeling your oats. It's okay for me to do it. I'm a sucker. Right. But you're going to have to answer to the press in a week. Yeah. And Derek Carr has spent the whole season blaming other people for shit. And I got really, like, on one of the, I think it was the third down before he got sacked on fourth down. He threw a slant, and I thought Olave just dropped it. And I got really mad at Olave. And then they showed the replay from like a reverse angle from behind the safety. Yeah. And the pass was clearly behind him. Derek Carr continues. Like, the reason why he only throws sideline out routes is anytime he has to measure the speed of someone running laterally, he either throws it 2 yards ahead of them or he makes the wide receiver reach back to keep the trailing cornerback from picking it off.
Maybe he needs the Jameis Winston surgery. He's got some fucked up depth perception. He needs LASIK or something. Maybe he's got some kind of fucking... I don't know. It didn't help Jameis, but shit. We all hoped
it would. Well, I mean, it might help in his personal life, you know? Like, he won't be better at football.
No, yeah.
But, you know, he'll be able to read the menus in a dark restaurant.
Right, he can parallel park.
Yeah.
How long are you guys stuck with him?
At least another year.
Two more. One more and probably two, just because of salary cap reasons. And then I think they blow the whole thing up.
Yeah.
I think they play him at full salary next year, which is going to be bad. Then they have like a $10 million buyout, but it forces all kinds of money onto their books, I think. And so it's going to be, I think, 2 years of struggling in a shitty division. And then the third year, it is going to be a real disaster where some kid in high school is who we start thinking about as our great hope in the next draft.
Oh, God. Can we trade? I mean, nobody would take him, but we could technically trade him, right? I just thought of this. This is what I thought of.
I'm listening.
Like, Dennis Allen, you know, like I said, Dennis Allen and Derek Carr, basically like the bad Santa, you know, one's the elf, one's Billy Bob. They travel around scamming teams.
Sure.
Okay. We fired Dennis Allen this year. He goes to an in-division rival, either Atlanta, you know, somebody like that, right? DA goes to, let's just say he goes to Carolina. Head coach at Carolina. All right. The next 2 years when he plays against the Saints, right, he fucking lets Derek Carr, like, kick his ass. Like, and it increases Derek Carr's fucking tradability, right, because he looks good, you know? He's gaming it. You know, he's losing the Saints on purpose and letting Derek Carr, like, especially end of the season, and like a lot of teams see that. And then there's a bidding war for Derek Carr. And then, like, we trade him to the Panthers. and then we get both of these scam artists off of our books in a division that we can now stomp them forever. That is like the only thing I could, that's the only way out for us, I think, right now.
You should have told them that privately, though. Yeah. Now that plan.
This is how Lex Luthor got
out in the open. It's not going to work.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
it's not going to work now.
Yeah, shit. you're like a James Bond villain or whatever. You know, explaining everything.
Damn it!
But I probably would have worked. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been great.
Trevor Penning watch. Mm. Two plays on special teams.
Right.
So you've got to watch very closely if you ever want to see him. He is gone. They, for a team that could not run the ball, our starting five offensive linemen played every snap.
Yeah.
So yeah. That rotation is clicking. you know, Kamara, I think, had, you know, some... You know, average like 2 yards a carry or some bullshit like that. What was it? What was Kamara? Yeah, nine carries for 19 yards. What? Like, how is that even possible? How is there never a lane open by accident?
Like one of the linebackers just tripped or something.
Yeah, we didn't even get that.
Something, or just one time. The guys all hit their blocks correctly,
right?
And there's an opening. I mean, the longest running play we had was 5 yards.
Oh, shit.
Like,
damn.
How is that even possible?
It shouldn't be.
Yeah. Broke one off.
Yeah. I made somebody miss.
Right.
And that somebody was 5 yards,
he probably
car.
Made like three or four people miss. Yeah.
He's Barry Sanders. Yeah. Fucking.
See, he somehow evaded the trailing foot of the guard. So he didn't get knocked over.
Yeah. I mean, he got tackled from the back and pushed that way. That's probably what the fuck happened. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, he got hit at the line and stumbled forward for five. And so that's the whole game, is that he actually passed the ball kind of well, but never on third down. And he doesn't get out of trouble at all. You know, when the pocket collapses, he doesn't have the self-preservation to run.
Yeah.
Like, he just either goes down or he just throws it up for grabs. And I was watching Matt Stafford save plays. And Matt Stafford's 40?
Yeah.
You know, like,
and
he's somehow,
really
he's not
fast
that old.
Or anything.
Yeah.
Right. He's not. I'm joking. He's not really materially older than Carr, a little bit, but not really. But he's not mobile. But he gets out, you know, he gets out of the pocket and he gives his receivers opportunities to get the ball, and Carr doesn't do that at all. He starts in the pocket and he stays there like a homesteader. You know, that is his land and he is going to die on it. And
he does. He loves dying on it. Yeah.
Like maybe to him, you know, given his political background of his family, maybe he sees mobility as like listening to rap music or something. Like, he's like, that's not how I
feel. Like, yeah, it's like urban. Like,
right. He's like, I don't. Well, actually, somebody in one of my group chats, I forget who, they made a pretty funny joke about, like, you know, calling 911 and saying, you know, there are a couple of mobile quarterbacks in my neighborhood. I don't look like it should be here.
That's good.
So like maybe for, you know, the David Duke Carr family, they're just like, no, mobile quarterbacking is just not what we do. We're not into that kind of thing.
None of that me razzle dazzle.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
We started here, and this is where we're going to stay.
We do the fundamentals.
Embrace tradition.
We're traditional quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, embrace tradition.
Right. He only... He only is in the shotgun formation because he won't let Alan take his guns.
Right.
Under center, what about my rights?
That's probably some truth to all of this, you know. He's like, leaders don't run, you know, we stand our ground. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, keep right. fucking standing your ground.
Right. It's once again the castle doctrine has cost our team 7 yards.
He's standing his ground, yeah. It's a, it's a stand your ground quarterback.
Oh my god!
And it's so nice when he gets hurt because he's got hurt like 3 times. It's not like I'm like rooting for him to get hurt, but I'm like, can we just put anybody else back there? Like, you know, fuck.
Right.
No, we got 2 more games to go. We'll see what happens.
We got 2 more games to go, and here's the thing: I gotta check while we're recording. Everything has gone wrong today, by the way, so people know we're recording on Sunday. And in the early games, you know, we need a bunch of losses in the NFC of teams who are competing with us. And in the early games, the Falcons beat the Colts, the Seahawks beat the Titans, at least the Vikings lost, but the Packers beat the Panthers on a last-second field goal. So every game except for Minnesota has gone wrong. And somehow, like, I think we now definitively lose every conceivable tiebreaker.
Shit.
And the Buccaneers are beating the Jaguars 20-0 as they approach halftime. And so it is possible that we win our last 2 and still miss the playoffs. Because if the Buccaneers win and we beat them and then beat Atlanta, the Buccaneers' last game is against the Panthers, and we would lose that tiebreaker. And so we could end up going 9-7 and still missing the playoffs.
Like, or 9-8,
and
right?
Still miss the 9-8, where we go 9-8 and miss the playoffs, which is with 2 division wins to close the year, and it would still happen. So truly, truly infuriating stuff.
I hope the Jags come
back.
Always,
that's a rough place to be where you're just, because it's like you're going to not get good draft picks and you're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Correct. But it's okay. We're going to trade the draft picks in.
Right.
That is, we're going to trade the draft picks for an offensive lineman that can't get off the practice squad.
Well, look, I mean, again, as I am primarily a Bears fan. We're talking about a team that's essentially never had a good quarterback and traded up in the draft, gave up picks to take Mitch Trubisky over Mahomes. You know? So it's like, you know, it could always be
that
worse.
Over Mahomes is what really makes that one sting, I have to say, because the Saints always trade up. They trade up so much.
Yeah.
And it never, and I mean never, works. They traded up to get Ingram, who was a workmanlike back. Why would you do that? They traded up to get, oh God, how am I forgetting his name
Davenport?
Already?
Davenport?
The defensive end. Marcus Davenport, who was sometimes good, but how do you trade up to take a small school defensive end in the first round? They traded up to get Penning, who can't get off the, who literally can't get off the bench. And like, they traded up to get Haener. they keep giving up stuff to move up for inexplicable reasons. Like, there's no way that Jake Haener is that much better than whoever you'd have gotten anyway. And they keep trading picks for shit like this, and they never learn. We are back to understanding why you have to be long DraftKings. Because there is always someone playing the game who doesn't know the rules.
I met Ingram.
Yes.
I played poker with him for, like Ron kind of wanted me to tell. I didn't... really recognize him, which is embarrassing as an Alabama fan, but, you know, like they're wearing helmets. I don't know what they look like.
Yeah.
I just played poker with him like for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. And we were sitting next to each other and just talking. And, you know, he was just a cool guy, whatever. But I had no sense that he was like, you know, even rich or anything. Like he was, you know, just a really ordinary, cool guy. And then I played with him a second day. And finally at the end, somebody's like, "Hey, are you Mark Ingram?" And he's like, "Yeah." Well, you know, and then he went off and bought a couple pizzas for the whole table, which was really cool. especially at Caesar's Palace, a pizza is like $50, you know, so,
shit.
you know, I like literally, you know, yeah. So he bought us all pizza. And if things had been sequenced a little differently, I could have been like, "Oh yeah, my friends are huge Saints fans. And they were just telling me how, you know, they fucked up trading up to get you because you're just a workhorse." You know, working like that.
No. That is any, funny. You know, he was a good. He was certainly a very good player for us, and I liked having him on the team. But those are like you have to split those things up, right?
Right.
The decision make. Like he was good, but I think was he ever an All Pro? He was a guy in a kind of speed and like you don't want the guy you trade up for to be someone who you package as like the power guy in a speed and power like you know quarterback tandem. I mean running back tandem.
And that's when he was at his best when they was using him and Kamara as like you know lightning and thunder. You know, like that was he was amazing. Yeah.
Well, he was one of those guys. Like I mostly hate the NFL draft, but the one thing I like about it is when you see, you know, so many of these guys come from like really difficult backgrounds and then they get drafted and they're like, it's over. We're good. Like my family's finally going to be safe and secure, you know, and Ingram was one of those guys I remember, you know, because his dad went to prison. I remember when he got drafted and they had him on the phone with his dad and he was just crying, you know, because you know, again, they had been through so much and like you essentially kind of like won the lottery of life. Like you're, this is it. You're good. You know, what I dislike is,
I mean, it's, you're going,
oh, just what you were saying, like all the false precision where, you know, and I think that's what those trading up is about. These guys convince themselves that they have properly evaluated these players. And we know from, you know, years and years and years of this, that nobody knows who's going to be good.
Yeah.
For the most part. Right.
Right. I mean, and I hate it because of what it does to me, which is to say my general sympathies are pro person. And, you know, Mark Ingram seems like a really nice guy, you know, generous, funny, like the kind of dude that he can sit and like hide himself and just be a dude at a poker table, right? He was 1,000-yard a season back. He was part of a great combination. And then you get GM brain and you put all of that aside and you're like, the fact is it was still a dumb trade.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Like in terms of the completely dehumanizing way of looking at it, where he is, you know, plug and play laundry. You shouldn't have traded up for this guy without, you know, without denigrating him as a person or a player. It's a bad use of 2 draft picks to move up 5 picks and take a running back. It just is. You need the patience to hope he comes to you anyway.
They fucked up on the other side.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right?
Because when they let him go to when he went to Baltimore, I think we ended up replacing him with Latavius Murray for damn near the same fucking salary. And Ingram was still better that year. And I was like, damn, so they tried to be smart that time with the money, and they might have saved like $1 million or something like that. It wasn't that big of a difference between whatever they paid Murray and Ingram. I was like, oh, now they want to be bean counters. Now they want to do this shit. And they fucking, you know, they gave up a really good talent.
Right.
Ingram still had a lot in the tank at that point. Not a lot, but he had a little more.
Yeah, enough that he was important in Baltimore. The point is that it turns, once again, we're back where we started with football just turning me into a monster and my response to it being to put my fingers in my ears and never think about it again. So who is the real monster? That is the lesson once again. It is not Mr. Hyde who is the monster. It is the Dr. Jekyll who keeps giving into his worst instincts. All right. So I think we should probably wrap this up. So first, Plex, you've got anything coming up?
No. I'm not very online anymore, so there's not. Ruthless Reviews is still going. My friend Shelby runs it now. He does a great job. So, there are good movie reviews and things like that on there now. I just didn't write.
Yeah, and in a Netflix age, if you see some interesting stuff on Netflix or whatever, or HBO Max that you wanna sort of see an old review on, there might be something up on Ruthless Reviews, and they're just smart, fun reviews. Yeah. So,
there's a huge, there's thousands of things on there. So yeah, especially if you like 80s action movies, that was kind of our niche, Commando and that kind of thing.
Ron, any closing thoughts?
I think I got everything off my chest. I did have one question for Plex. I wanted to ask you, what's the most you ever made on a bet?
On a sports bet?
Any kind of bet. Any kind of bet. I'm just trying to picture. I'm trying to picture you happy at the casino. like what did you want to look like? Like,
no, my soul is totally dead about these things. So, the answer is for sports, it was like 16,000 for. Fuck. I played a slot machine where I won 20,000.
Mm-hmm. So I also don't really have final thoughts. I now can't believe that our season is sort of functionally over before I flew down. I was hoping my trip would be much more about football than drinking away my troubles. but we can't always get what we want.
It's a good city for that.
And what, place. Definitely is. So I guess what we close with is the sad horns, because it's a sad day. It's a sad day. Every possible game that could have gone right has gone wrong. And so we sign off with 3, 2, thank you to our guest, Plexico Gingrich of RuthlessReviews.com. Thank you, as always, to my partner in crime, Elron Mexico. Thank you to nobody affiliated with the New Orleans Saints. And thank you to either Lunar Snow or Dan Partial of Candy Necklace for doing our sound engineering. We will see you next week after our barely meaningful game against Tampa. Who dat?